Hi, everyone, and welcome to another monthly edition of the Student Press Law Center's podcast. I'm Frank Lomonte, Executive Director of the SPLC. The Student Press Law Center is a nonprofit advocate for the rights of student journalists everywhere. We're online at www.splc.org, on Twitter at SPLC, and we're reachable by email, splc@splc.org, if you've got any questions at all about your legal rights to gather and publish news. Well, it could hardly be a more timely subject to talk about youth civic engagement as we're sitting here in March 2016 in the throes of an unprecedented, in many ways, presidential campaign, one that is being regarded as the most vitriolic in modern history. Young people are participating in high numbers in support of certain candidates, but there are persistent questions about whether our education system is doing enough to prepare young people to take ownership of their democracy. Our guest today, Judge Thomas Jacobs of Arizona, is the author of a series of books published through Free Spirit Publishing that highlight the legal system for young readers. They are targeted for a readership of ages 13 through adult, and his most recent book is just out, Every Vote Matters, written in partnership with his daughter, Natalie Jacobs, who is also an attorney. Tom Jacobs served as an assistant attorney general in the state of Arizona for 13 years. After that, he was appointed to the trial court in Arizona, where among his assignments were serving as a juvenile court and family court judge until he retired from the bench in 2008. He's also taught juvenile law at Arizona State University, and we're so happy to welcome Judge Jacobs to the podcast to talk about the book Every Vote Matters, and especially about how educators can be using it to get young people more excited about their own legal rights. So thanks for joining us, Judge.
You're welcome, Frank, and thank you for this opportunity.
Well, start us off by talking a bit about how your experience, in particular your service as a family and juvenile court judge, got you interested in this current line of work, which is demystifying the legal system for young people.
It did start in when I was appointed to the court. My first 13 years of practice, I spent as an assistant attorney general in Arizona, representing a number of state clients, state agencies. I worked for the Department of Corrections for a year or so, and then did criminal work for an additional three, prosecuting cases in different counties around the state, and also doing a fair share of appellate work. And then there was an opening in the child welfare division in that same office. That interested me, and I was fortunate to be able to make the transfer to that division. So that led to my next 9 years representing Child Protective Services as my sole client and handling cases statewide for Child Protective Services. And that opened my eyes to the whole area of student rights, children's rights. And I noticed, and this was in the late 70s and 80s, I noticed a lack of information in the written word for people coming to court, for anyone curious about, do these people even have rights and what is the juvenile system about? And so one thing led to another, and I was fortunate to find Free Spirit Publishing in the mid-90s, an education publisher out of Minnesota. And I wrote my first book, which was just basically an answer to many of the questions I was asked every day in my courtroom by not only the juveniles that were appearing before me, but by their parents, by law enforcement, by educators. What rights do exist? What are the rights and responsibilities of juveniles in America? And I did some research, didn't find anything really on the subject that answered very specific questions about their rights and responsibilities. So Free Spirit put this book out, and then I've written a number. This most recent one, Every Vote Matters, is the fifth book I've written for Free Spirit in their teen law series. So things just, one thing leads to another.
There's a theme that runs through this book. It starts with the title, Every Vote Matters, and you highlight throughout the book how votes particularly on the U.S. Supreme Court, have proven to be, throughout history, decided at times by a single vote, which dramatizes to young people the value of that vote. And one of the things, by the way, I mean, I love this book. I couldn't recommend it more highly. One of the things I really like about it is it doesn't talk down to young people and it doesn't sugarcoat the seriousness of issues. There are some very adult topics in here, things like the death penalty for juveniles, things like strip searching kids for drugs that are not sugarcoated, that are dealt with in a very serious and forthright way, even though the book is written for ages 13 and up. But it's very respectful of your audience, which I really like, and I think is somewhat unusual, frankly, in the way that we message to young people. But please do talk about the concept of Every Vote Matters and then how that's presented throughout the book.
Sure, thank you. What sparked the idea was I've got a number of other books out that I write for a legal publisher, and my responsibility over the years has been to provide annual updates for law books that I've written for judges and practicing attorneys. And in the course of doing that, I noticed from like 2005 on, the number of 5-4 decisions that were being issued by the Supreme Court. And with a little research, I found out that there are well over 1,000 decisions from the U.S. Supreme Court decided by one vote in matters important to all Americans in their daily lives. Putting that together with research on the other books and then watching the election cycle in this country and reading the statistic in 2008 that about 40 million Americans not voting in that presidential election just kind of opened my eyes to trying to figure out why. What are the reasons for this when by one vote, 9 people out of now 320 million Americans make these decisions, and many of their votes come down to 5-4. And then I noticed in 2012 that the number increased. Approximately 90 million Americans did not vote in that election. Eligible voters, about 20 million were registered voters who didn't get to the polls. The other 70 were people who didn't bother to register or vote. So that prompted my daughter and I to just take a close look at this, and Natalie and I have worked on this book now for the past 5 years, and as you mentioned, it did just come out last month, and the timing is just, it was certainly not planned. It was planned for this election year, but not with what's going on in our presidential election this year and the primaries. So the purpose of the book and the title is really our response to everyone, not necessarily teenagers, because it's only the older teenagers, 18 and 19, that can vote, with a very few exceptions to that in some states or areas where if you're 17 and some states where you can register at 16, vote at 17. But for the most of the country, you turn 18 and then you register and hopefully vote. But it's our answer to all those people who say, why bother to register? My vote doesn't matter. It doesn't count. And that's the line that we kept in mind, that statement that we kept in mind throughout our research. We need to point out and show people, educate them as to why and how every single vote matters. And not just in a presidential year, election year, every 4 years, in all matters throughout your life. You're exposed, actually, to voting possibilities and opportunities from elementary school on up. Because if you think about it, there might be, even in an elementary school, they might elect a class officer or somebody similar to in high school, the student body president. There might be clubs or organizations at school, you know, whether it's middle school, elementary, or high school, that you will join, you'll voluntarily join and enjoy, but they might elect club officers. And that requires a vote, whether it's a raising your hand or a voice vote, or actually a ballot, whatever process is used to elect that person to that particular office. You're exposed to the concept of voting from a very early age. We want to impress upon everybody of that not only the responsibility, because you do have the opportunity in this country to express your views by voting, and it's so simple to do. And we would like that, once it's instilled in the child, in the teenager, that they can express an opinion and voice their vote, continue that on throughout their adult lives. And this year in particular, if you consider the fact that 90 million people can vote, that's a strong voting bloc that can bring about major change in our country. As far as selecting a particular candidate and voting on issues, propositions, whether it's an initiative or a referendum, whatever it might be, votes matter. In the first part of the book, we do talk about the voting process. We present a timeline in the book to show what the history over the last 200 years, what's gone on with voting. We, of course, bring it up to date, and there's even we present little sections about barriers to voting. We ask questions that are being discussed across the country in cities and counties and states about mandatory voting. Should it be mandatory? And to eliminate the barriers, and there are barriers that exist today, and a lot of them are under litigation now in the courts as far as being able to vote and voter ID. All of these issues come into play. We do point out why every single vote matters. And, for example, there has been one president, the 20th president of this country, Rutherford B. Hayes, who was elected by one vote in 1876, one electoral vote. And there have been other instances where Supreme Court justices have been either confirmed by the U.S. Senate or rejected by one vote. So one vote at all different levels of society can and is making a difference. I mean, if you think about the 2000 Bush versus Gore case that the Supreme Court accepted and ruled on, Bush only gained the presidency by five electoral votes. And it came down, and it was a consequence of two votes, one in the Florida Supreme Court and one by the U.S. Supreme Court, by one vote in each, 4-3 in the Florida Supreme Court and 5-4 in the U.S. Supreme Court. So it bringing it up to date from the late 1870s to the present, every single vote matters in many, many situations.
Yeah, although voting is the overarching theme of the book, it's really a very in-depth survey of the workings of the legal system, but done, as you explain, not from a historical perspective so much as a very contemporary perspective. It has references even to court cases that have been ongoing as recently as a month or two ago. So you clearly were editing right up until press time in this book. So it is a very readable current events type of a book rather than being a dry historical treatment, which I think is wonderful and makes these issues much more relatable to that core teenage audience. Talk a little bit about how schools today do or don't present the issue of student rights and that broader issue of understanding the legal system. It seems like schools do a fairly good job in their history and civics classes of explaining that chart we all studied about how a bill becomes a law. And you get quite a good survey of the legislative process and who has held the White House, but maybe quite a bit less about the workings of the judiciary and the legal system. And that seems like a need that you're addressing here.
Right. I mean, it seems I'm sure someone at first glance would look at the book or a write-up or a review of it and come away with, well, this is a rather abstract approach to the importance of registering to vote and actually getting to the polls and voting. And that was our intent. We want to show the reader, because this is not presented, our approach to this subject is not presented in schools at all that I'm aware of, in all the different schools I've been in contact with over the years with my juvenile writing. This is just too much for them to handle, and it doesn't fit the guidelines that they need to teach as far as testing at the end of the year and all of that. So we thought we would show and bring it up to date and make it very relevant, very current to what's going on in America today. And our approach to the subject is fairly simple. It boils down to this, that when we go to the polls every 4 years and vote for the president, and as I mentioned, the president can win by one popular or one electoral vote, and then the president has the constitutional responsibility, and we're living this right now because of the recent passing of Justice Scalia. The president has the constitutional duty to nominate a replacement for that particular vacancy, for Justice Scalia's seat on the Supreme Court. And then once the president nominates someone to fill that vacancy, the job then passes to the Senate, again by the Constitution, to pass on that, set a hearing, review the candidate. Of course, he or she is vetted thoroughly before they set a hearing, and then vote, an up-and-down vote, as they refer to it, either rejecting that nominee or confirming, approving that nominee to fill that position on the Supreme Court. And as we know, there's no limitation, term limits on a Supreme Court justice, so that person sits for life. They can step down at any time. That's their decision, but it's a position that is there for life. Recently, one of the justices retired in 2010 after serving 35 years on the court, John Paul Stevens. So they make tremendous difference in our lives because of the issues that are brought before them. So what we do, we present 15 chapters in the book about 15 particular cases and issues that the court had under its, they set oral argument, they took it under advisement, and they eventually ruled usually by the end of the Supreme Court term, coming to an end at the end of June. And we present 15 cases that were decided by one vote. These are all cases that were 5-4 decisions. And these are issues that affect all of us that are discussed across the country, whether in newspapers or on radio shows or in courts where there's litigation going on all of these different issues. And that includes, some things that don't affect most people, but campaign finance, search and seizure issues when it comes to digital privacy rights, search and seizure when it affects what the police can do, what law enforcement can do as far as searching your person or your car, many, many issues that come before the court that are ruled on 5-4, LGBT rights, the First Amendment, of course, with freedom of religion in public places, freedom of association, case before the court this term in regards to affirmative action, which is going to affect our youth when they're applying for college or university in the future. So a lot of the issues that they decide are issues that are in the news, that are being discussed. Some of them, hopefully, are being discussed in classrooms, but we want students and adults to understand that these 9 people are making these decisions for everyone in the country. And our point is in presenting different cases that were result of 5-4 decisions by the Supreme Court is we ask the reader at the end of each chapter to consider and discuss, either with their family or their classmates or whoever, what would our lives be like today in this country had the court decided by one vote the other way? If they had not decided in favor of, let's say, gay marriage last year, which is a decision in 2015, we would still have some states that allowed it and other states that didn't. And what's the effect as when you go from state to state and you move, and then if the marriage doesn't last and it leads to a divorce action, can that even happen in a court in a state where you move to that doesn't recognize gay marriage. But, you know, that's been resolved now because of the 5-4 decision by the court last year.
Let me ask you this. What do you think is the level of knowledge and appreciation of the workings and importance of the judicial system?
I don't think it's broad. I think many professionals understand if they keep up with the news and study up on the subject, or even if you just follow the newspaper, the daily paper, you're gonna get a cursory education on the subject. But I think most people today are just so busy getting by, making ends meet, taking care of their families and other responsibilities. I think first you have to have the interest. But once you realize, and that's one of the points we're trying to make to our readers, is that once they realize just how important not only the Supreme Court is and the work that it does, and I think they'll gain an appreciation for the work that they do by reading this and seeing that the responsibility that they have in making and coming to these decisions, it has an effect in their lives. But I think people are gaining, especially maybe one silver lining in what's going on in the country now in this election cycle, is that people are paying attention and listening to what the issues are. If we can get past the preliminaries and talk substance, they are learning about the process, the role government plays. And we have a very interesting situation facing us right now with the interplay of the three branches of government. We've got the executive with the president having to nominate a replacement in Justice Scalia's vacancy on the Supreme Court, and then that passes to the legislative branch, where the Senate has to take action, and what they're taking action on is the appointment of someone in the judicial branch. So we've got all three branches of government, to the interplay between the three, and it's so important, the decision that's made, especially in this situation with the Supreme Court, because it is a lifetime appointment. So we've got a lot going on, and I think people need to study up and not just accept and pass on sound bites without going a little bit deeper on the issues and questioning any substance or lack of substance that they're hearing or reading about. It's all of our responsibility in, you know, participating in our democracy that's what we want students to do. We want students to get engaged, because we want them to understand, even though they're not of voting age, they may not be 18, they could be in middle school and be 12, 13, 14, they still have opinions, and there are ways that they can express those opinions.
Well, I want to give a shout-out to two different websites here. Judge Tom Jacobs' website is called askthejudge.info, www.askthejudge.info. You can find links to his own publications as well as his speaking engagements and his other work. Also, the freespirit.com website carries a catalog of Judge Jacobs' publications there. Just in the couple of minutes that we have left, this new book, Every Vote Matters, also comes with what's called a Leader's Guide, which I guess is the teacher's edition of the book. So maybe you can talk in just a couple of minutes about how you envision that schools might be able to incorporate the Every Vote Matters book into the school day. Like, where would these lessons live? Where would they belong? And how could they be made to fit into the Common Core demands on our schools?
Right. We prepared, at the request of our publisher, actually a leader's guide or a teacher's guide to accompany the book, and they provide it free upon purchase of the book. And it's for educators to browse through so they can keep up to start the conversation about any of the 15 subject matters in the book. And what we do is we present questions and answers that the teacher can use with his or her students in the classroom to get the conversation going. We get not only the conversation, but answering questions about, okay, I'm only 14 years old. What can I do? I know there's a city election going on, for example, and one of the propositions on the ballot, for example, is about banning the use of plastic bags, or there's an issue on our state ballot this year about recreational use of marijuana, or maybe lowering the voting age. There's all kinds of issues that affect everybody, and it doesn't have to be on the national or the federal front. It could be something right in your hometown that affects you. Maybe you've heard your parents discuss it at home. So we provide the teacher prompts to discuss these various issues, and we suggest to them activities that they can raise with their students about, well, here's what you can do. You, if you feel strongly on a subject, you don't have to keep it to yourself. You have a right to express your opinion, your views on whatever the subject might be. You can write a letter to the editor, for example, of your local paper. If you want to change, for example, a rule at school, maybe there's a part of your dress code at school that you disagree with. What can you do about it other than just maybe discuss it or gripe about it with your friends at school? You can take action. You can take a look at what the policies are in the school and the school district, maybe by taking a look at the student handbook, and circulate a petition for signatures. Attend local council meetings or Board of Education meetings. Many, many things you can do to bring about change and get engaged in social activism. That's what we would like our students, our youth to do, and this is all very, it all applies, of course, to adults. They can do much the same thing. The guide really just gives information to the teachers and discussion points and suggestions they can make to their students who are interested in a particular issue and want to do so, actually want to take action and try to bring about some change on an issue that they're interested in.
Terrific. Well, we've got to leave it there, but thanks so much to Judge Tom Jacobs for being our guest and for this valuable contribution that's eminently readable and will have a place on my bookshelf, and I hope on yours too. Every Vote Matters, available through Free Spirit Publishing. Thanks, Judge Jacobs, for joining us, and thanks to all of you for listening to the Student Press Law Center podcast. We'll be back next month with another installment about the legal issues impacting student journalists and their advisors. In the meantime, you can find us online at splc.org, on Twitter at SPLC, or through email splc@splc.org. Thanks for listening.